Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Small business owner, you are special among Americans. You are a latter-day pioneer of our society and truly one of America's heroes.
Welcome back, heroes. It's 33 after the... It's 13 after the hour. Didn't mean to give you a start there. Some of you said, oh my goodness, I'm late. It's only 13 after the hour, folks. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. The guy who can't read a clock is here with you. Hey, all right, Doug, I'll do the jokes here. Doug Stiers, ladies and gentlemen, that's the voice of Doug Stiers. He's our resident CPA. He's the manager of the tax department at Kirchen & Company, the largest CPA firm in central New Jersey, out of Rebeck, New Jersey. And he joins us today to talk to us about some things that are important, like estate planning. And, Doug, one of the things that a few years ago, estate planning, most people thought that estate planning was really for just wealthy people. But really, today, there are people who are wealthier. Some of those people who used to think that are now some of the wealthy people because their business has taken off with this with the growing economy. Their real estate that they own has doubled and tripled maybe in value. They have become part of what's being called the investor class, which means that almost half of all Americans are invested in the stock market today. So there's some estates out there that need to be protected, aren't there?
It's just incredible what's happened. A quick statistic is, I think it's about 3 years ago now, that the accumulation of wealth in the stock market surpassed real estate in this country. And that was 3 years ago. The market's been up, what, about 30 or 40% since then?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this investor class is real. I mean, what is it now? It's in the 40s. I've forgotten what the percent is, but it's in the 40% of Americans have some presence in the stock market.
Oh, I think it's way beyond 40, but yeah, let's say 40.
But it's not half. I know it's not at the 50% range. But then as we said, you throw that in, you throw in some of the balance sheet information that I know you see every day, where these small businesses have grown so significantly. Maybe they've sold their businesses. Maybe 5 years ago, you know, they were struggling to make it, and now they sold their business and you know, they sold it for 20, 30 million or whatever, and they were just regular Joe 5 years ago out there operating, you know, just digging it out with a small business.
We see so much of that. I remember in 1993, only 6 years ago, what was then my largest client, and you always introduced me as having the biggest CPA firm wherever we are here.
All 26 of you.
Right. I just want people to realize we're not some great big outfit up here. We're 26 people representing very small businesses. Point is, I had a client sell for $15 million, sell his business, and that was just staggering. I remember my hand was shaking writing the numbers. And now it's just no big deal. Six years later, not 50 years later.
If he got $15 million today, you'd be saying, who valued this company? What's wrong here?
Yeah, you know, maybe we'll hold out for 30 or 40.
Right. Now, let's talk about what would you say if someone walked into you right now and said, okay, Doug, I've got an operating company here, and you've seen my balance sheet. You see what's going on here. What's the first thing you should tell him?
let's straighten out our hypothesis here a little bit. Is this somebody who's looking to sell their business?
Well, not necessarily. No, let's say this is that's the reason I use the word operating company. This business is operating. It's not about to be sold. And the guy says, you know, Doug, look, 5 years ago I was a red. Now I've got I've got $2 or $3 million in retained earnings here.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, first of all, is I would criticize whoever the accountant was to let you build up $2 or $3 million in retained earnings.
Well, you're the accountant, Doug.
As from an income tax point of view, that's a disaster. But that's not what we're here to talk about this morning.
Right.
And I think where you're leading me, and I'm not doing too well this morning because I'm tired, but yeah, is you all of a sudden, if you have a couple of million dollars on your personal balance sheet, and part of it being attributed to your business or not. You all of a sudden have an estate tax problem.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody down in Washington and the Internal Revenue Service is just rubbing their hands together waiting for you to die so they
cha-ching,
can strike.
Cha-ching, cha-ching.
You do that so nicely.
I know.
and you're right. So many people, many of my clients included, say, oh, I don't have anything to worry about. I understand I can die with a couple of million dollars and not pay any estate tax. And I say, well, that's pretty much true, but what do you have? And I get my pencil and my pad out. They say, well, what do you think my business is worth? And I'll say, well, let's just write down $1 million. Okay, well, that's really all we have. Well, no, wait a minute. You have a house? Oh, yeah, but I have a mortgage. But what's the equity in the house? And what about your life insurance? Guy says, well, I do have $500,000 worth of life insurance. You mean that's included? Well, if you don't do it right, it is.
But don't forget, he owns his real estate personally that the business is in.
Okay, so, you know, you add another $500,000 or whatever, and the typical client we represent, Jim, is you add those numbers up, and you're easily to $2 or $3 million.
And let me tell you something. Oh, by the way, don't forget, his retirement package has quadrupled in the last 4 years.
Yeah, okay. You know, the example I use there is we represent a whole bunch of people who work in my part of the world for Merck Pharmaceuticals, and anybody who has Merck stock knows what's happened to that. Last couple of months it's been down, but over the last few years it's quadrupled.
Right.
So there are people literally working at Merck in the mail room or in the maintenance department that have over $1 million worth of Merck stock in their 401k plan.
Right. One of the things that I want to point out to folks is the people that were the example of the guy, the small business person, man or woman that you were just talking about, that's someone who maybe they've been in business for 20 years, let's say. And for the first 18 years of that business, maybe they only took home $40,000, $50,000 a year. That they established a lifestyle that was comfortable, and the business, you know, contributed a lot to a lot of their lifestyle. But basically, they really weren't taking a lot of money home. They kept investing in the company and growing it as they should have been. But all of a sudden, here they are. They're 55 years old, and as you say, they've got this $2 or $3 or $4 million estate. Those people, there are a gazillion people just exactly like that out in America right now.
Yeah. And what happens is this, Jim, is the people that are worth $20 million have long ago hired someone through their family to do estate planning, and in most cases will pay little if any estate tax when they die. And people that are sitting with, you know, debt or maybe a net worth of a couple hundred thousand dollars have nothing to be ashamed of, but frankly they don't have an estate tax problem. It's the people with a couple of million that we deal with mostly and that we're concerned about. And if they haven't done anything to do any estate plan, they need to do something before it's too late, and that doesn't mean until you're old and gray. If you're 25 years old and you're worth a couple of $1 million, you need to start working on your estate plan.
And which we're going to talk about some specifics that Doug has to talk to us about on what you can start doing to rectify that problem. It's 20 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We'll be right back with Doug Stier. Stay with us, please. We are back. It's 24 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for joining us. I appreciate your business. Our phone number is 888-822-8255, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Doug Stiers is our special guest. He's the resident CPA of the Small Business Advocate Show and a member of our Brain Trust. We're talking about estate planning, and earlier in the hour we were setting the stage just to sort of get your attention about who needs to be focusing on this, which is pretty much everybody, really. And Doug, what I'd like to do now is get you to tell us what is one of the first things that you need to do to start establishing a good estate planning in your life.
You need to write a will. And just to use myself as an example, when we had our first child now 25 years ago, the shock came into my head is, good God, what happens if something happens to both of us?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that we, God forbid, are killed in a plane crash or automobile crash, common disaster. We didn't have more than probably $10,000 that we could get our hands on at that point, all in one spot. But we had a daughter. And if something happened to us, at least under New Jersey law, she would become a ward of the state if there was no will that somebody could find when we were both dead. So we quickly
even if they were grandparents and that sort of thing.
That's where they'd wind up. But
uh-huh.
Still, if you know, they pulled us out of a car wreck and said, "Wait a minute, we have an orphan daughter here,"
right?
You've got to go down, stand around court, and hire lawyers and all kinds of nonsense, which you just don't need. The court doesn't want to do it either.
Right.
You have a will. And, you know, as long as that's in a spot where somebody gets their hands on it, which means you don't put it in your safe deposit box. You might put a copy in there, because guess who can get the safe deposit box?
Only
my wife and I, and we're dead. Now, yes, you can get an officer of the bank and all those little things. But the point we're trying to make here this morning is you need to have a will, not just for estate tax reasons, but for other personal reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to be the guardian of my children if my wife and I are both dead? And you've got into something else in a while about if we're still alive, we become incompetent, then you need powers of attorney and so forth. But
right.
The point I'm trying to make at this point is you need a will to explain who gets what, number one, and also who does what, who takes care of your children if they haven't reached their majority, You know, what you want done with your house, what you want done with something as basic as clothing and jewelry, if you have any concerns about that.
If you want to have any kind of say about what happens to your stuff and the people that you love, you better write it down now while you're alive.
Yeah, we advise people, and there are people out there that will snicker when I say this, but, you know, if you have a family heirloom, I don't care if it's a piece of jewelry or a piece of china or a piece of silverware, and you specifically want that to go to someone, whether they're a relative or just a friend or somebody that lives next door to you, you need to write that down. You need to put it in your will. And I know some people out there say, oh, yeah, but if you put it in your will, the government will then tax it. Well, if you have good accounting advice, they won't tax it because you're going to do estate planning, which I think we're going to spend the rest of the time this morning really talking about to try to avoid the estate tax.
Now, talk to us about what happens if you don't have a will.
Okay. Now, again, I have to caution people. This varies state by state, but in general what happens if you die intestate without a will. And even if you are married, you still, if I drop dead today without a will, my wife is going to pick up all the assets that we have in joint names, which is not a good estate planning tactic, if you will. But let's assume we have some things in joint names. Fine, she takes those over. But then the things that are in my individual name, she's going to have to wind up going into court and letting a court decide. Of course, they're going to be influenced by her and any other interested parties as to where my assets go. She has to have the court appoint what's known in New Jersey as an administrator of my estate because there was no will saying who was going to be the executor.
And all this could have been avoided with a will.
And it can be a two sheets of paper. It doesn't have to be 100 pages long.
All right. Now obviously, I'm sure you recommend that we get an attorney involved in the will.
Yes, yes. And again, in virtually every state, I'm a CPA. I cannot do a will. I can talk to you about it. I can make recommendations. But it is a legal document, and you must have an attorney draw it. Actually, you don't. You can do it yourself, but I think that's crazy.
What you can do is get a sheet of paper out or your computer or whatever and start writing out your wishes and then take that to an attorney and let them build the will around that.
Exactly. If we make no other point this morning, please don't buy one of these books where you fill in the blank for $39.95. You know, spring for the couple hundred dollars. I agree with what you're saying, Jim, is get your thoughts organized. What attorneys generally charge you for is time.
Yep.
In the days of word processing, they have facsimiles of wills already laid out. They just fill in the blanks, but they're doing it knowing what is going to be accepted and what isn't.
And if you have trouble getting started with that project, call the attorney that you're going to use, and they probably will fax or email or deliver or whatever over a prototype that you can work with, and then that will save you money when they wind up producing the finished document. As you say, Doug, you can fill in the blanks on those.
Yes.
Stand by, folks. We're going to take a break. It's 29 after the hour. We're going to be right back with our good friend, Doug Stives. All right, we're back. It's 33 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and Doug Stives is our special guest. He's our resident CPA with Kirchner & Company out of Red Bank, New Jersey, and we're talking about estate planning. And, Doug, one of the things that's going on right now is, as you know, there's a tax bill that's actually passed the House and the Senate. Will be on the way to committee and then ultimately on the way to the president, who said he will veto it. But one of the main components of this bill is the elimination of the death tax.
Well, except we've got another version. I just had the New York Times here about 20 minutes ago, and yesterday they came up with yet another version.
Okay.
But you're right, to get us back on track, is that still calls for a phase-out of the federal estate tax.
Right.
And will it happen? I don't think so, Jim. I think they might slow it down a little bit, and what we don't want to do is leave anybody with the idea, well, I don't have to worry about estate tax because Congress is going to do away with it.
Right.
And I'll tell you, and some people are going to smirk when I say this, but one of the reasons it won't do away with it is because it would eliminate a tremendous number of jobs in the legal industry and, frankly, in the accounting industry. So, you know, there will be strong lobbying to keep some form of estate tax. The hard, cold fact is this, though, is the estate tax, the death tax, at the federal level, raises only about 1% of total revenues that go into the federal budget.
But don't you agree that it is a horrible tax?
Yeah, because, again, I just mentioned it only raises 1% of total revenue, but it catches the ill-prepared, in some cases, the people that really shouldn't, in my opinion, have to pay it. Because we said before the break, the very wealthy people don't pay any estate tax.
The small business, the small farmer, who, as we said earlier, just basically worked their whole life making a living, but their assets accumulated inside of that business,
mm-hmm.
and then all of a sudden they die. They had $750,000 worth of life insurance. They had, as you said, the home that they paid $40,000 for in 1960 is now worth $500,000, et cetera, et cetera. They really didn't understand. They didn't realize that they were worth that much. And now all of a sudden they've got a $3 million estate and a pretty doggone hefty tax bill.
Well, yeah. Except I need to jump in there and point out that Congress did react to relieve the small businessman, including farmers, a number of years ago. And then they expanded the relief again in 1997, and they're talking about doing it again now. That, Jim, if you or I die, assume that neither of us have any value in a small business. Hate to beat you up on that, but you know where I'm going. You can have up to $650,000 of assets today if your assets are all in stocks and bonds and real estate and so forth. But someone who has a small business that represents more than half of their gross estate can die with $1.3 million, twice as much, absolutely free of the federal estate tax.
That's as an individual, not as the couple.
Right, talking one person at this
okay,
point.
Okay, explain how all that works, because if you died, for example, if something happened to you, God forbid, your amount, the amount that you're allowed, the deductible, so to speak, would roll up to your wife because she's still alive.
Yeah, what happens is this, and it's confusing, and see if I can get it right the first time. Is it doesn't matter how much you have when you're married, because if I die today and leave everything to my wife, we use something called the unlimited marital exemption to move everything over to my wife absolutely free of estate tax.
If and I'm that's worth, automatic. You don't have to do anything to get that.
That's right.
That's statutory.
If Bill Gates, worth however many hundred billion he's worth today, dies and his will has one line, says I leave everything to my wife, the government doesn't get a dime when he dies. Now, I guarantee you that's not what his will says.
Right.
But, you know, hypothetically, if I die and everything goes to my loving wife, Elizabeth,
right.
That's it. There's no estate tax. You don't have to file a form. Well, you maybe have to file a form. Depends on what you have. But then when you are single, when you are the surviving spouse, or you were never married or you're divorced, whatever, and you die at that point, you don't have a marital exemption anymore because you're not married, and you must be married at the date of death.
Let's take this widow or widower, and now this collectively they were worth say $2 million,
mm-hmm.
and one of them died, and now you're not married anymore,
mm-hmm.
and does your estate not assume any? You don't have any kind of exemption.
That's right.
I did not know that.
Or more specifically, if I go through a divorce. I don't want
what
that to happen.
$650,000? Where was I getting that?
Well, you're right. That is the exemption for each individual, but if I leave everything to my wife, I'll use the unlimited marital exemption, okay?
Her estate wouldn't have a $1.3 million in exemption?
Well, where you're going is kind of to the next step. What happens is this. Let me try to again by sake of example. If my joint estate, my wife and I, is worth, let's say, $2 million, all right, and I die and just leave everything to her, then when she dies, she only has her $650,000 exclusion. She'd get stuck, or her estate would get stuck paying tax on the balance, which would be $1.35 million.
Mm-hmm.
If I put a paragraph in my will that says I leave $650,000 in trust, what we call a bypass trust, or sometimes called a credit shelter trust, then I only leave $1.35 million to my spouse. The $650,000 gets tucked away in a trust,
mm-hmm.
on the side, so to speak, Jim. Then if my wife dies the next day, she gets a $650,000 exclusion, and her estate only pays tax on $700,000, if you're with me on the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So that by setting up the bypass trust under my will, we save tax on another $650,000.
Yeah. When we come back, folks, we're going to get Doug to tell us how to save tax on all of it. 39 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We'll be right back. We're talking about estate planning. If you have a question, the phone number is 888-822-8255 or a comment. Stay with us. We'll be right back. All right. We're back. It's 44 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you for joining us. Doug Stives is our special guest and our good friend. He's the resident CPA of the Small Business Advocate Show. Doug, I want you to tell us in a minute about how to avoid all tax, all estate tax.
In a minute, we need about 6 months to answer that question.
Well, but before we do that, what I want to talk about is, I want to talk about exactly how much someone would pay. Let's go back to Let's go back to our $2 million estate that we were talking about, and the last surviving spouse has died, and that estate's worth $2 million. And let's say that they didn't do the trust, that they didn't do anything. That the first person who died had a will, the second person who died, the last spouse who died had a will as well. It left it to the family, but still, that still creates a taxable event, right?
Yeah.
And we got $2 million of net worth. Now, when we say $2 million, I've heard horror stories where the IRS comes in and counts silver and China and things like that.
That's rare. That used to be more typical back in the 50s and 60s when, frankly, the IRS had more personnel and more time on their hands. They're as short-handed as any agency out there at this point.
Okay.
And they're relying more on computers and things. So that, you know, if you file an estate tax return listing $2 million in assets, and you don't put anything down for what we call personal property, they'll challenge you on it and say, well, you know, obviously there had to be some silverware and
right.
jewelry and things.
Mm-hmm.
And people say, well, how much should I put down, Doug? Well, you know, something reasonable. I will admit to you that we typically pick a number like $10,000 or $20,000 and just say personal property, bang.
Right.
Some people want it both ways, though, is they'll say to me, well, I don't want to show any of that stuff when I die, but I want to insure it while I'm alive. Well, if you have an insurance policy and you're listing, you've got $50,000 worth of jewelry and, you know, silverware lying in a drawer worth another $20,000, and then you don't want me to show it on your state tax return, I just simply can't do that.
Right. Let's calculate the tax on that $2 million estate.
Okay.
How would that work? How much taxes would we pay?
Now, I've got to put a disclaimer in here. This is 1999 law we're talking about.
Right.
It may change, and also we're into a phase-in where it is going to change over the next 6 years, Jim. But if somebody dies this year and they have a $2 million estate and leaving it to children, their spouse has predeceased them or they were never married or they're divorced, okay? They die with $2 million in assets, and that includes insurance, stocks,
mm-hmm.
pensions, retirement plans, and silverware, okay? You have $2 million. The first $650 is free. That's your exemption. So then the last $1.35 million is subject to federal estate tax. And here's the killer. The estate tax starts at 37% and goes as high as 55% in terms of marginal brackets.
The first rate, the lowest rate, is 37%.
37% it starts at, okay?
Hmm.
So if you had, let's go back, if you had $750,000, the first $650 is free. The next $100,000, the tax on that alone would be $37,000. Using our example, the $2 million estate, that puts you up into a 49% marginal bracket.
Now, that's on what's left of the total.
Well, no, that's on, well...
I want to come up with an actual number. We got $37,000 for the first $100,000.
Yep.
That gets us up to $750.
Mm-hmm.
So we still got a $1.25 million.
Yep, then you jump to 39%, then you go to 41%, 43%,
right.
45%, 49%. So without going through the whole labor
right.
of the computation...
Average is about...
It's going to be about 40%, about 42%, probably more realistically... On $1.35 million, okay, and I got to light up my calculator to do
I'm
that.
I'm doing it for you. Times 42%.
$567,000.
Holy mackerel, folks! Think about that.
Yeah.
Of the $2 million estate, you're going to pay more than 25% of that to the government. Now, here's the scary part. Let's say that entire $2 million, there was no insurance. There were no insurance proceeds. There's no stocks. It was all real estate or all on your company balance sheet. And the company is basically paying its bills. It's not like we've got, you know, a few hundred thousand in cash. How many small businesses do you find around like that? Somebody's got to sell something. Right,
that's
Doug?
One of the problems. The worst problem you can have is what we call an illiquid estate.
Yeah.
And I did mention, I just want to not lose sight of this, Jim, is that if this $2 million estate, if half of that is represented by value in a small business, then you have not a $650,000 exemption, you have a $1.3 million exemption. It effectively cut your tax in half going through this example. But
we're still talking $250,000.
Exactly.
Over $250,000.
And you need to write a check 9 days after the date of death.
9 days?
Mm-hmm. 90.
90 days.
Right. No, stop again. 9 months. I said 9 days. I meant 9 months.
But still, still, the thing is, though, is that somebody's either going to have to go get a loan or somebody's going to have to sell something to pay that off. I mean, most families are not going to have $500,000.
Right. One other little sidebar, though, is that if a third of your estate is represented by a small business, different rule, you can do a low-interest loan with the U.S. government, and you pay the tax on the small business portion of your estate over 14 years at 4% or with 4% interest.
I hate this tax because all I can see is farmers and small business owners out there having worked all their life to accumulate something they never really got. They never really lived a life that made them feel like they were millionaires, even though they actually were. And they paid taxes on the accumulation of that. Every penny they earned, they paid taxes on it, and now the government's going to get another quarter of it. I hate this.
Sad but true.
I hate this. Folks, if this doesn't make you want to call your senator and congressman in Washington and say, please make sure that the abolishment of the death tax is in the new bill, whether the president signs it or not, please make sure it's in there. I'm counting on you to do that. It's 50 after the hour. I'm going to get off my soapbox here in a minute. I'll be right back with Doug Stein, Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Stay with us. We're back. It's 54 after. Thank you for joining us. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Doug Stives is our special guest and our good friend. He's a member of the Brain Trust, the resident CPA of the Small Business Advocate Show. And, Doug, give us your email.
Email is dstives, D-S-T-I-V-E-S, CPA, @AOL.com.
So if somebody wanted to drop you a quick email or something, ask you a question, as you've done in the past, you'd be glad to talk to them. And if they wanted to contact you by phone, would you give us your number, please?
732-747-0500.
And if you would like to contact Doug, or if you'd like to have a question for Doug and you forgot any of that, you know you can always go to my website, smallbusinessadvocate.com, send me an email and ask me about that, and I'll be glad to pass it on to Doug, as I've done many times with lots of the different guests that we've had on the show. Doug, I was just getting my ire up in the last segment when we were calculating. It really made me mad to calculate the estate tax on that poor little family that I was just telling you about. This family that was worth $2 million, neither one of the parents, the people who founded this little company or this little farm, ever thought that they were millionaires, but all of a sudden they're dead now, and their estate's worth $2 million, and their kids have got to come up with half a million dollars in taxes. We talked about the fact that there's legislation in progress that may avoid some of that, that may be able to abolish some of that, but in the meantime, there's some other steps that we can take. We don't have enough time to get into all of them right now as we wrap up the hour. We're going to get you back in a week or so and get you to talk to us about some of the other methods. But what are some things that we can do quickly that will help avoid these taxes?
The most typical cure that we come up with, Jim, is some trust planning. We could spend a week on that, but just to, you know, bait our people for a future show, is we use what we call personal residence trust. We use one of my favorites called a charitable remainder trust, to basically get assets out of your estate but not take away the income from the assets. You know,
what about the control?
Well, that's hard to do, but if you do the last one I mentioned, a charitable remainder trust, you can still make all the investment decisions.
Mm-hmm.
You just can't leave the balance of what's left in that trust to your family when you die. You need to leave it to a charity.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, to say that's one of my favorites and particularly relevant to people with appreciated portfolios.
Right, but the kids don't like that, obviously.
Well, except that then again, what you can do is replace with some of the assets from the savings that the charitable remainder trust generates while you're alive. Or if that doesn't work, sometimes we'll actually go out and buy some life insurance to replace that outside the estate.
Right. All right. What are some other things? And by the way, folks, what we're talking about here, Doug is mentioning some of these things. We're going to have him back in a week or so and talk to us specifically about how some of these things work. What I wanted him to do in this segment was to let you know that there are methods, there are devices out there that you can use to avoid estate tax.
I mentioned just a couple of trusts. There are dozens of them, Jim, but to go to another area quickly is just lifetime giving. Most people are aware, and probably several people are already participating in that type of program where you can give away up to $10,000 a year to everybody, not just your spouse, not just your kids. You can give
right.
away to friends and business associates, anybody you want to, even
is
your
that account. $10,000, in other words, if you had a child, you could give them $10,000 a year for forever and ever?
That's right. Every year, every calendar year, and if you're married, you and your spouse can both do it, which I use myself as an example. My wife and I can each give each of our kids $10,000, which if you do the math, we can dispose of $40,000 of cash or other assets each year. It's away from our estate forever, and it's free of any estate tax or gift tax.
What about income tax?
Well, what happens if I move the $40,000, the gift is not taxable, not deductible to me, not taxable to my kids, but then the income, if they put that into their
right.
pile of assets, the income, the dividends, the interest become taxable to them.
Doug, that's got to be the last word. Thank you very much. We'll get you back real soon. We'll finish this discussion.
Okay.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Doug Stives. We couldn't do without him. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest country in the world. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.